Hello there, I'm Miranda Gretton, and this is Take a Moment with NCHC, the show where we talk to you and your colleagues about experiences that affect you. Listen on your drive between patients or in your downtime, whenever you get the chance to take a moment.
Next week, on the 1st of November, we celebrate the second annual National Community Health and Care Day, aimed at raising awareness of the breadth of work community health and care providers do to keep the population healthy and well. This year, the campaign will focus on the importance of partnership working to ensure people are looked after locally and kept out of hospital. I'm joined today by NCHC's Director of Nursing, Carolyn Fowler, and Executive Director of Operations at East Coast Community Healthcare, Adele Maiden, to talk about community healthcare. Adele, when people think of the NHS, they often think of ambulances and big hospitals, and community healthcare often gets overlooked unless you need it. So tell me how your career led you specifically into community health and care rather than sort of those big acute.
So mine was by accident, really. So I'm a physiotherapist by profession, and I ended up specialising in musculoskeletal services. So that's for people who have sore knees and sore backs and or have had some surgery for their joints. And the musculoskeletal service was part of the acute hospital, and it was thought that it would be better if it worked in a community because it'd be closer to people's homes and it would bring the care closer to primary care. And the service was moved out of the acute hospital into the community, and I went with it. And I've never looked back, because the experience of working in the community and the actual recognition of what a difference it makes being closer to the community itself, closer to the person's home, closer to primary care, particularly in musculoskeletal services, made a huge difference. So that was it was by accident, but a really positive experience.
You work for East Coast Community Healthcare, don't you, often called ECC?
Our headquarters is in Lowestoft. The majority of services we provide are across the Great Yarmouth and Waveney area, but we also stretch across the whole of Norfolk and the whole of Suffolk with some of our services, like the smoke-free service, the ME-CFS service, that's the service for chronic fatigue, and we reach out and work really closely in partnership with our NCHC colleagues in different areas of the patch.
That's partly due to the fact that we are now an integrated care system, the ICS. Carolyn, are you able to tell me a bit about the ICS and how community in general kind of fits into that system?
So, I mean, the ICS, the important thing about the ICS is it is an integrated care system, so it includes us all. So all of those that are providers, and that might be health and social care, it may be voluntary services, place people like Health Watch, it's about where we can all come together to make the best and most efficient use of resources, how we decide as a strategically how we're going to deliver our services, and importantly, I think at the moment, it's how we work together to keep patients as safe as possible. And part of that is keeping care closer to home, ensuring that patients stay in their own homes wherever possible. Part of our role is to avoid people going in avoidance admission and to help discharge. So it's the best thing we can do, really, is to work together to make the best services for patients. And I think our partners range from our acute trusts, mental health trust, social care. We're all here for the same reason.
What does that actually mean for the patients on the ground? You know, strategy can be quite difficult to understand. What are the benefits for a patient, for example?
Yeah. So I think the important thing is when you actually get down to what people do, some of it's about how do we make sure a patient's pathway is the best it can be, the right people seeing the patient in the right place. So if we didn't talk to our acute colleagues, then we would work in isolation and patients may well fall in gaps between services. So for instance, if someone has heart failure, all of us deliver parts of that journey. By working together, we can actually map that, make sure there aren't any gaps, make sure the services are in the right place for patients, and look at it more objectively rather than just from your own trust and think, oh, we deliver that, that's fine. Actually, we deliver that. Are we the best people to do it? Who's our partners? How can we make this service better? So the conversations daily about how we can improve patient pathways and what's the best thing for our patients and carers.
So it's regular contact. That's the important thing between all of the partners.
I mean, it can be daily. So you've got the strategic side where you're planning, But you've also got the unplanned side, where most people know at the moment that it's very challenging. We see that in the media. And again, that's very much about the blue light ambulance sitting outside hospitals. But actually, we sit possibly as often as daily or more than daily with our colleagues in Acute Trust, with Adele and Eck, working out how can we make this work better? What can we do today to support? Where can we make a difference for patients being safe? Can we put extra resources in here? So it's that unplanned, constant conversation all together, sitting off around a virtual table. And then it's the higher level strategic planning ahead. What will the best services be for our patients?
Adele, does that mean also minimizing the amount of time the patient has to repeat their story? If we're linked up in that way, does that mean that if I go and see one of my partners and I tell them what my issue is, I don't then have to repeat it 10 times with the other partners?
Absolutely. And our system one, our clinical records, helps us in that space. And we are looking at sort of the next level of digital transformation across the ICS, where we have technical stuff in the background that I'm not an expert in. That means if you're a social worker, you can sit there and see what are the critical parts of the healthcare record that make a difference to the decisions that you make with the patient around their care. And the same for a healthcare worker. You can work with that patient. They don't have to tell you what's in the social worker's record because they will be able to see it, or what happened in the hospital. So we are still a long way off from that being perfect, but it's starting to come, and we are starting to see some really big steps in changing that. There is the day-to-day working together, the daily conversations that protects the patient from having to tell their story too many times, but it's access to expertise. So we have expertise in different clinicians and different professions and different organisations, and the ICS now allows us to collaborate much more freely, has opened the chains of communication so we can share that expertise and make sure the person in the middle is getting the best that they can get from the things we have on offer. The other thing within that, and I mean, it's a bit of political jargon, but it's about the levelling up agenda and equity. So historically, our organisations have evolved differently, they've been paid differently, and the services that have been bought on behalf of our communities have been different. And by working together now, we can look at what's the good stuff and what's the stuff that we would want to do better, and work together so that we get a really good service for all of our communities. So no matter where you live in Norfolk and Waveney, you get the best opportunities to get the best healthcare. And we're starting to look at that population health agenda in that space. So we can, it really shouldn't matter where you live, you get the best that there is to get.
We talk a lot about accessibility and making sure that we're seeing the right people for the right issues, but also in terms of, you know, a lot of our patients have potentially learning difficulties or difficulty understanding what is on offer and where to go. And so in terms of accessibility, I presume that will really help looking at that patient pathway all the way through from the very moment they get the letter to say where they need to go, which service they need to see. It will now be the right service, but also we need to be looking at how accessible that letter or that communication is as well, don't we? You know, is that something that the ICS is looking at as well?
Yeah, and it's looking at how the digital agenda can help us in that space. So at the moment, you might have a phone number for one service, a phone number for a different service, and each of our organisations will pride ourselves on having a single point of access. But there might be a single point of access for all the services within its EC, a single point of access for the services within the County Council or within NCHNC. And it's how do we work in the background? So actually, it doesn't matter which number you call, you're going to get to the right team. And that the no wrong door approach. So as well as your clinical records, so it doesn't matter which clinical record it's written in, the people looking after you can see and access it. It doesn't matter which phone number you call, the people who answer will know what you need to get. They won't push you on to another place. And then in that space where people want to use technology, you know, what can we use in terms of apps? What can we use in terms of websites? What can we use in terms of text messaging and emails to help our environment as much as helping smooth the processes, but also recognizing that everybody has access to that. And that may well be a choice thing, a skills thing, or even just availability of devices and kits. So working together helps us to really start to challenge those difficult issues. And they are difficult, but they were easy to resolve. We'd have done it years ago. and they're not, and which is why we are really starting to grapple with some of those things now.
I suppose it's that old adage, isn't it, that many hands make light work. And, you know, if there are lots of us in the ICS and we're all working together in partnership and collaboration, then these things will surely come a little bit easier and a little bit quicker than they would if we were doing it by ourselves. It's a really new and exciting way of working. Are you getting good feedback from patients? Carolyn, are we at NCHC getting good feedback from patients?
I think it's early days. If you think we've been building up to this, but obviously July was when it came into being formally. I think we will see positives, definitely, with a much more streamlined pathway, the lack of telling your story several times. I think the bit that Adele talks about around no door closed, we still get people say, well, I phoned this person and they said phone this person, and that's, you know, really disappointing that we're still doing that. So it is happening. So I don't think we've fixed it all yet, Miranda. I think we've got a long way to go. But I think the intention is there, but it's not just the intention now, it's the action. And there's a real sense of collaboration between the providers about actually let's forget about the walls to our buildings and let's see ourselves, you know, as a team, because that is the only way we'll make a difference. So I'd like to think I could say yes around patients seeing a difference. I think they will begin to, definitely, but we've still got some really tricky problems to solve, and we've got some plans for those, like technology, like the communication. But yeah, it was going to make a difference.
It's like building a house. It's not until the very last bit of shiny door handle has been put on a building that actually you step and you think, wow, this is really different. And we're in there, you know, the footings are in one place, the first fix is in a different room, and the roof hasn't quite gotten on yet in some places. And it's bringing that all together that I think is really exciting. But there's so much that goes on in the background before actually the tangible difference is felt. And we are doing it at a greater pace, and we are able to do it now. Whereas before we had the collaborative ICS, we were building houses in different places, and now we're building one big house.
You mentioned earlier on the shared care record, where the social worker would be able to see what had happened in the hospital and out in the community. And I know that that is going to have a huge positive benefit to our staff. But what other benefits will staff see to being part of an ICS?
Broader support, I think, is a biggie for me, especially where we've got very small specialist teams. We can stretch out across the ICS. If I think about our looked after children's service as an example, it's a very small number of highly specialist clinicians who are very passionate about a group of children and young people who have very significant needs at times. And when they've been working in isolation, that's really hard to deal with. But now working across the two organisations, the peer support, the ability to talk about the experiences that they're having and how difficult certain things are, gives a huge benefit to those individuals. And it spreads that psychological safety space. So what we're trying to do is ensure that by working together across clinical areas, we bring together that sort of supervision, that expertise, particularly in those smaller areas. And then where we've got bigger teams, so our primary care home teams, for example, then learning about how it's done in different places, and we can take best practice and work together to change that. So it means different things to different teams, that kind of collaboration.
And I think for me, all of that, absolutely. I think there's something about learning together, learning from each other, and what we've been able to do more easily. We've tried before, we have done it, but I think because we've really now got that foundation, we've done some learning events where there's been an incident, a safety issue, we want to establish what's happened. And rather than all doing separate bits of work around it, we've actually come together and said, right, let's just follow this pathway and see what went wrong, what went right. And I think we've got more of an open culture for staff to be able to put their hands up and say, I think this is where maybe we could have done it differently, without that fear of, oh my goodness, what people are going to say. So I think that's about us as senior leaders as well, you know, creating that culture where people are happy to talk freely. But the learning and the richness of learning when you get people from lots of different providers round a table, be it virtual or face to face, is massive. And that will not only support our staff, help them understand and learn, but also it obviously helps the safety of our patients. And I think the other thing for me is innovation. We are constantly, all of us, trying to be creative, looking for new ideas. A bit like Adele was saying, doing things in small groups can be frustrating. You don't have the resources. But actually, if we put innovation together and we all agree on some key areas, we can make some really big differences. And I think we're also listening to our staff's voices around ideas they have and taking those ideas from the front line and moving them right up through the ICB so that we're all aware of them and then doing something different.
The ICB is the Integrated Care Board, is that right?
So we talk about the board as the greater group of people that are available and support us in the integrated care system. So we're all part of that system, but then the board is there and we've got lots of new people in the board working with us to deliver a lot of the things we're talking about. So they're very important really in the direction and the vision for this.
It's interesting when you say that staff are feeling more confident to talk about what they could have done differently. I think if you put your hand up and say, that didn't go quite right, I wish we'd done it differently, and someone else in another organisation says exactly the same thing, you almost feel validated, don't you? That, oh, it's not just us that maybe could have done it differently. We're all feeling our way, you know, and that we've all got improvements to make. But also, like you said, Carolyn, sharing those good stories when things have gone right and we're doing something brilliantly, sharing it out, because why keep that to ourselves? You know, I think it sounds like such a positive, creative way of working. I'm interested to know how working together in this way might impact our waiting lists. Will being collaborative and being part of a wider system make a difference to our numbers, do you think?
I think it will. I think it will take some time, but there's a number of reasons why it will. One, because actually we can really look at where services should be and where the best place for them to be delivered. Secondly, we can look at any duplication. So a lot of patients are being seen by numerous providers for numerous things. So if we can work together and share information, we can probably stop duplication and make sure that patients aren't having to go to numerous places. So I think that's something that could make a difference. I think we can ask for help from each other. I think we can learn what's best practice. Even with our own trust at NCHNC, we've got many, many services. And a number of them, as we know, have waiting lists. But there's a great creativity in there where people are doing some amazing things to keep people safe. So we're sharing that internally. But what we can also do is share that learning and those principles with each other. So with ECK, with the acutes, and then bring those best practices together. And then I think the key thing is then the strategic design of services. So let's not just design them in pockets of geographical areas, but let's actually think, what is the best practice and how do we do that? And that's the bit that you'll probably take a little bit longer to see come through the other end, but we'll all be working together around that.
One of the really simple things is, how do we use sort of the technology so that we're not sending a letter that waits for someone to look at between organisations? So the whole digital agenda will mean that, you know, when we're working with our primary care colleagues, so their record system is the same as our record system. Instead of having to write a referral that goes and sits in big process, there is a simple task button that gets pressed and gets seen within a couple of hours. And those sorts of things will help not shave waiting lists dramatically, but each step in the process speeds up a little bit. So the experience of people using those services gets better and better.
Why should people consider a career in community healthcare?
Gosh, there's so many reasons. I mean, I am hugely passionate about community care. I mean, I've been in acute trust, mental health, I've done lots of different things, but I've come back really to the thing that I love. And the reason I love it is because I think it's a complete privilege to be able to give holistic care in people's homes. We also, both ECK and NCHNC, have inpatient units where patients are there for specialist care or for rehabilitation. But I think it offers so many opportunities as a career, so many specialist areas that we both have. It might be a specialist epilepsy nurse, diabetes, it could be physio, MSK, as Adele talked about, occupational health, podiatry, numbers of different careers that you can have in community. But I think the one thing for me is, just going back to what I said at the beginning, that a lot of our work is in the home. A lot of what we do is keeping people where they want to be. And when you walk into somebody's house and you knock on a door, you never know what's going to be behind that door. So use all your skills to do that assessment, that holistic assessment, understand the family, look at the photographs on the wall to see who that person was, and then deliver the best care you can for them to keep them safe. And if we can't avoid them going into acute, then that's what has to happen. But one of our big roles is to keep people where they are safest, which is in the community. And I think, you know, that to me is, I used the word before, but I think it's a privilege. And I've always loved doing that. And I've always felt, even now, when I drive down a street, I think behind every door, it's a whole family with a whole world, a whole set of hopes and fears, and you get it, you become part of those people's families.
Whether you want to be a generalist or a specialist, whether you want to work in someone's home or you want to work in a clinic space, whether you want to be patient facing or run the professional support services, there is a huge amount of variety within the community that is unseen. And it's not until you get there and you work in that environment that you see what the opportunities are and where you can take your career and what kind of experiences you could get that chimes with you, because not everybody is suited to every role. The other thing I would say is there are more than just the clinical services. So sitting behind every community organisation, we've got IT infrastructure, we've got human resources, we've got payroll, we've got the digitisation agenda, we've got project management and transformation resource. There are so many other elements. You don't have to be a clinician. Our phones are manned by a really good team of individuals who have to work with complexity. Our triage teams, they're in the background, but they help prioritise. So if someone's fallen in the community and they need a response within 2 hours, our triage teams are the ones that are coordinating that. And you don't need to be a clinician to work in a community. And when you walk into a community building, the atmosphere is different. And you can only experience that by doing it.
And I think the other thing is the opportunities around things like apprenticeships to support the growth and development of people. So you don't have to decide that I'm going to be this. You can come in and have an apprenticeship and or look around and try things. And that is for clinical and non-clinical. So I think apprenticeships have a huge amount to offer in the whole of the NHS, to be honest, and in social care. But the community, we really champion these as a way of helping people to progress, but also, you know, have a role and a salary at the same time.
Important to say as well, at any age you can do an apprenticeship whenever.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're finding quite a few people are coming into the NHS, you know, later in life. I think even since the pandemic, people have understood the NHS a bit more, realize it's challenging but also very rewarding. So we've got people coming in 40s, 50s, looking at training in clinical roles or actually just completely changing what they're doing. I spoke to someone that had been a teacher that's actually decided to train as a nurse. So anything's possible in our careers.
It's also worth noting, isn't it, around the NHS terms and conditions and pensions and things, there's sometimes a misunderstanding that doesn't apply in the community, but it absolutely does. You know, that will follow you around. So if you want to move from an acute hospital into the community, your length of service and your protection in that space will follow you. So it's a great place to work.
Thank you for listening to Take a Moment with NCHC. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please visit the podcast intranet page to leave a comment and for details of our other episodes. You can also follow NCHC on all social media channels.